Interesting news about eyesight is how we'll start. We all blink. It's painful not to blink after a while of trying not to. Research suggests that blinking does more than just lubricate the eye. After all, why would the eye need so much blinking to stay lubricated? We may have wondered. Our eyes are closed for 10% of the time when we're awake because of blinking. So what else does blinking do? Studies have shown that it refreshes our attention, for example. Now, academic research by a neuroscience team out of America suggests blinking does something else. Auckland University ophthalmology professor Dr. Helen Dinesh Meyer joins us. Helen, kia ora, very good to have you on.
Kia ora, Jim. Thank you for having me.
Blinking helps with seeing. It improves vision. This is interesting research.
It is. It is very interesting research. When we blink, two muscles on the eyelids are working. One, the orbiculus oculi, closes the eyelids, and then the levator opens them. And these two muscles are actually probably the most rapid working muscles in the entire body. At the same time, underneath the eyelid muscles, the eye actually rotates upwards behind a blink. So the natural phenomena is that during a blink, there is less stimulation coming onto the retina. And that's why this research is so intriguing, because the researchers have concluded that this very short period of decreased retinal stimulation actually enhances the visibility of vision immediately afterwards. We blink about 10 to 25 times per minute, and a blink is very fast. It's about 1 to 1/10 of a second. And we know that blink rates vary depending on various physical factors, emotional factors. So, for example, Air Force pilots blink less when they're over enemy territory. Lions blink less when they're checking out the planes, when they're looking for an attack. And we blink more when we're agitated or when we're talking to people. So blinking is a very complex process. And what the investigators try to do is they try to remove all of those variables to just look what happens during a blink. And what they noted is that immediately after the blink, that once the eyes were open, the retinal sensitivity was greater than any time prior when they were in during the periods of non-blinking. So for a split second immediately after the blink, they had greater light, and the retina was able to pick up a bit more light. We don't know how long that increased retinal sensitivity lasts. Is it only for a split second, or does it last quite a period of time? So that was one of the limitations of the study, is that we didn't know that. So they didn't find that blinking helps in a high contrast situation. It was only in moderate or low contrast situations that the study found there was a momentary improvement in vision.
So if I think I see a burglar in low light conditions in a bush outside my house and I blink, then for whatever length of time, it will improve my being able to distinguish shape, even if it's fleeting?
Well, we don't know, because it was only for a split second that they found the increased contrast sensitivity. But we do know is that when people are concentrating, the blink rate drops dramatically. So blinking is like a windshield wiper coming across the eye. The purpose is fundamentally to keep the cornea clear and to moisten it so the cornea, which is the front window of the eye, can see clearly and have light come and be placed on the retina. So a blink is like a windshield wiper going. If there's the windshield wiper goes too quickly and too often, it actually can impair vision. It has to be right at that sweet spot, going at the right amount of time to improve your vision.
Okay, so the windscreen stays the same in terms of level of clarity, but the windshield wiper might make things a bit clearer for a second, a split second.
Exactly. We do know we blink a little bit more than we need to keep the windscreen clean. So we blink more than we need to keep the cornea clean. And there's been some interesting studies that show that, mammals, humans are included in that the ones who are involved in greater groups, or they tend to blink more. So blinking is a form of communication, and it probably sends a lot of nonverbal cues and reflects subconsciously on what we're thinking and what we're doing. You know, studies have shown changes in blink rates depending on the type of movies we watch. If we're watching a movie which is scary or a horror, then we tend to blink more, while we're watching a happy movie, or dare I say, an erotic movie, the blink rate decreases in those circumstances. So blinking is very complex. It's not just one process. It actually integrates the entire brain.
Do we notice that if I come to your office and meet you, do you notice that I'm blinking, even subconsciously, that I'm blinking a lot or not blinking much?
Yes, you can notice that when someone's engaged in a animated conversation. If you count their blink rates, it's been shown to be higher. It's a very complicated process. It's controlled by dopamine, which is a neurotransmitter in the brain. And that's why some conditions, such as Parkinson's disease, is associated with decreased blink rates, because there's a decreased amount of dopamine in the brain. And things that increase dopamine, such as excitation, that causes an increased blink rate.
We're talking with Professor Helen Dinesh Meyer from Auckland University, the ophthalmology professor. So, if we blink, if our eyes are closed for 10% of the time because of blinking, the eyes are a really high maintenance area. I mean, that's a windscreen wiper going for a lot of the time, isn't it? I don't think we, it's not just lubrication, it's just maintenance as well.
And actually, eye movements and blinking requires the entire brain for adequate integration and functioning. And again, that's why blink rates vary in different conditions. They can vary in, you know, some studies are trying to identify whether blink rate makes a difference in predicting dementia. We know that some psychiatric conditions are associated with different patterns of blink rates. So it is a very complex process that requires the entire integration of the brain.
Speaking of dementia, we'd also like to ask you about a study out of a university in the UK which suggests that a loss of visual sensitivity can predict dementia 12 years before it's diagnosed. And I imagine this isn't new to you, but that's a long lag time. Is this correct? What do you think of this research?
Again, the problem has been measuring it and quantitatively turning it into a useful biomarker that can be used clinically and practically. So this is a strong study. The person was given a triangle and on a computer, and as soon as they saw the triangle, they were supposed to push the button, which gave an idea of their reaction time. Then there was a complex visual sensitivity test where the triangle was either upside down or a different shape, and it was formed from randomly moving dots on the screen. And so they used these two measures to look at the reaction rate. And what they found is that the reaction rate to these two tests was predictive of associated with some of the variables that we know are associated with earlier development of dementia. And so that was very interesting. Now, there were other things that they found were associated with dementia as well, but those were probably more ones that we would accept, you know, such as memory, being able to recall a list of 12 animals, or to remember numbers, or other tests that they did. We would think, well, that's obvious. But what was interesting about this is not a direct measure of what we normally think of related to dementia, and it was able to identify features of development of dementia earlier. You can do the tests within a few minutes. And unlike, you don't need an MRI to put someone in a big machine to do it, or complicated other tests. So I certainly think that the future in diagnosing early dementia is with these visual biomarkers. There's a high false positive rate in the way the results are available for clinical use at the moment. So they're in the research world. But as technology converges with our understanding of the science, and we can develop more rapid biomarkers, this will no doubt change in the next 5 to 7 years, I predict, where there will be these very readily accessible biomarkers. One of the areas that we're researching at the moment is looking at eye tracking and using that as a biomarker for picking up the accuracy of eye tracking for picking up dementia, as well as other neurological disorders, looking at pupillary response and blink rates. So I suspect that if we have this conversation in 3 to 4 years, there will be a constellation of these visual tests that we will be able to provide a much more accurate prediction than at the moment. At the moment, there would be not a clinical tool that if you came to me, I could give you an indication of dementia accurately.
No, because you don't know whereabouts on the spectrum I'm starting from, which I understand.
Exactly. Exactly.
People with dementia, though, it said scan other people's faces differently. And we probably don't even realize how we scan faces. And, quote, some doctors working with people with dementia will recognize that someone has dementia when they meet them, unquote. I assume you would have this ability, though. Is it a kind of lost look? I mean, can you do that?
Yes, well, again, there's a range. I think there's, some patients that we would all be able to say when we see them that they have that lost look that you refer to, and some findings are a bit more subtle. So again, there's been various researchers that have looked at what happens in dementia and how they scan faces. So, for example, a study out of Australia showed that people with dementia spend more time actually just looking at the eyes, perhaps because it's taking them longer to process the information that they're getting from the eyes. Other studies have shown that people with early dementia look at the eyes in unusual ways. So they may not look at the eyes first off, while most of us would look at the eyes first off. They look at other places of the face and then they come to the eyes. So it's a different pattern rather than just the amount of time people spend on the eye. So again, this is an area of scanning. Eye scanning is an area of research. And again, with the development of AI, where they can follow how we're scanning, this is an exciting potential for the future.
Yeah, I can see the tech is improving all the time. We've heard before, and I've talked about it, that eye movement can also improve memory. People who watch more TV and read more tend to have better memories and less dementia as well than those who don't, Helen.
Yes and no. I don't think that the evidence to say watching TV necessarily improves memory as such. But there is a body of research that suggests that moving the eyes may help you recall a certain, I guess, a memory or a fact that you're looking for and you can't find. So when we just flick our eyes rapidly to one side, that actually involves 60 to 70% of the pathways of the brain. So it goes from the eyes into the middle part of the brain, then it goes to the frontal eye fields, which is in the front of the brain. Then the message goes to the very back of the brain to coordinate that with what our retina has given it. And then it has to come back to the middle of the brain where the nucleus is for moving the eyes. And that's why it's so in tune to any abnormalities, such as concussion, dementia. We can pick up all sorts of things by looking at eye muscle tracings that are abnormal. So I think that the eye muscle movements is very complex. And one theory is that when you're moving your eyes from side to side, you're kind of like waking up parts of your brain that are nearby one of these pathways, and that may help evoke the memory that or the fact that you've forgotten.
Does that work in practical terms? If I'm trying to remember the name of someone from childhood or summon up a scene that I've forgotten, but I'm talking to my brother or my sister and they can remember, but I can't, will it work in this way, do you think, by flicking our eyes from right to left? Can it have that kind of immediate effect?
I would have thought that if we purposely start looking from right to left, no. But if we do it subconsciously, that may help kind of wake up the processes by exciting the neural areas close to the eye movements. But a voluntary saccade, the evidence that that actually helps evoke a memory is limited.
Yeah. One last question. Researchers in the US seem to have discovered that pupil dilation can indicate levels of working memory. Individuals whose pupils dilated more while performing memory tasks tended to have better working memory. Again, Helen, could this discovery pave the way for an easy enough test?
Absolutely. So again, this is what, you know, one of the things that we're looking at is changes in pupil size, blinking, and eye movement all together to come up with a biomarker for memory, for brain health, and we're hoping to develop it as a readily accessible app. The theory behind the pupil predicting memory is that a person who has a wider range or bandwidth of sympathetic, parasympathetic activity is perhaps more mentally nimble and agile. And this is just a window or a predictor of that. Rather than changing pupil size improves memory, it's that it's a surrogate marker for memory.
Gee, we're all looking forward to the improved diagnoses using AI, as you say. It's a fascinating area. Helen, thank you very much for being able to talk to us about it.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.